Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome to House New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight's legal topics episode is a legal checklist that your attorney should have when buying a co-op. Stay tuned for Bob.
And lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome to Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight's another of our legal topics episode, and we'll be dealing with the legal checklist that your attorney should have when buying a co-op. And now here's our host, Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe.
Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. Tonight we're going to talk about the steps that a client and an attorney have to take when they're contemplating a co-op purchase. So, Jason, what do you think you, when you decide you're going to buy a co-op, what do you think you should be doing and what do you think your attorney should be doing before you get to that contract signing?
Well, if I had to say the first step, I would suggest making sure you find a good real estate attorney and somebody who specializes in this sort of transaction and for you as the buyer before you you enter into any type of agreement or even probably consider making an offer. You yourself should probably be doing the due diligence to research a good attorney to represent you in such a big purchase.
Well, that was a great answer, actually. You should engage an attorney. I was actually trying to push all of the burden off onto you, Jason, that you do all the work and then come and tell me about what you found. But you answered the question correctly, saying you should really get an attorney who has some familiarity with New York City-style co-ops. And I know a few shows ago we talked about what co-ops are, and just to refresh everybody's memory, myself included, co-ops are not really the same as a house or a condo. Houses and condos are known as real property. You own them. Real property is governed by a set of rules that goes back, centuries of how things are inherited, how things are transferred, etc. And you actually own the dirt and the structure that's on the dirt. Co-ops, on the other hand, is what called a personal property. And personal property could be money you have, bank accounts, stocks, jewelry, furniture, cars. Those type of items are known as personal property. And a co-op is also known as personal property. Why? Because you technically don't own the building or the unit that you're living in. You buy shares of stock in a corporation. That corporation happens to own the building. And as sort of a perk of buying those shares in the corporation, you're allowed to live in a unit so long as you own those shares. So a slightly different approach to buying something as a, buying a co-op rather than, say, buying a house or a condo. So what are some of the things that you've heard that are attached to co-op ownership or things you've acquired? You own a co-op, and what are some of the things you've acquired in buying a co-op or documents you've seen?
Well, you get the you're a shareholder in that building, that cooperative, and you get your paraphernalia from the management agency that gives you the minutes of the meetings and the annual shareholders meeting as an owner, and you get to see all those things that appear in the budget for the building, and that's probably the big one, and probably the one that people just throw away and discard because it's just a lot of information prepared by the accountant that the management agency hires.
Yes, and you often wonder if they're cooking the books or not, but hopefully not.
You always assume they're cooking the books.
Yes. Well, you did hit on a couple of topics. So when a person starts on their venture to buy a co-op, they retain an attorney who knows something about co-op transactions. And that knowledge is kind of limited to the New York City metropolitan area where co-ops, where there happen to be a big density of co-ops. Once you get out of this area, you start seeing condos. And as I told you, a condo is really like buying a house, which may or may not be stuck to the dirt, but nonetheless, you still own that three-dimensional space of a condo. But with a co-op, your journey begins first, of course, identifying a building, making an offer, and retaining an attorney. At that point, the attorney is going to ask for both things. Going to ask for the financials, which you alluded to. The financials are issued every year, and it'll say something. What attorneys look for basically is the income and expense portion of it, as well as the mortgage portion of the financials. What attorneys look for is the income and expense statement of financials. And, of course, with financials, you hope that the bottom line is black and not red. So if a co-op takes in $500,000 in fees and maintenance over the year and they spend $490,000 and you're in the black for $10,000, that's usually a good, you know, sign. You don't want to see deficits, although that happens occasionally. A deficit might arise from a jump in a certain commodity or something that the co-op is buying, oil, for instance, insurance on the property, those things. Water is now a big item, or a requirement by the city that your building install such and such type of equipment, either plumbing or electric or elevator-wise, and that those kind of things might take a co-op board by surprise and cause, you know, what was a rather well-thought-out budget to end up in the red. And that occasionally happens. You don't want to see red too much. That's, you know, a mismanaged building. The other thing that you'd look at in a financial statement is information about the underlying mortgage. Now, with a co-op, there is generally a mortgage on the entire building. The person who turned it into a co-op was the owner, got the idea of turning the building into a co-op, and in the process, a mortgage got put on the overall building. That's a little different than the mortgage. It's not really a mortgage, but people call it a mortgage that you might get in order to buy your particular unit. So we're focusing now on the mortgage and on the underlying building, and that's usually a couple million dollars, and it runs for generally a 10-year period, although amortized over 30 years to make the payments easier. But at the end of 10 years, it means your board has to go out and refinance. Of course, with interest rates fluctuating, you could hit a period of high or low interest rates when you have to refinance. So what an attorney might look for is a relatively recent refinance that took advantage of low rates and locked it in for 10 years. So over the last couple of years, interest rates have been in the threes and fours, so your board may have been able to secure a mortgage, you know, for the next 10 years at a 3 or 4%, you know, range. And that, of course, the underlying mortgage is a portion of your maintenance, so that component of your maintenance at least will be steady over the next, you know, 8 or 10 years. So that's an important thing. And people always ask about the reserve fund. And while that's an important, that shows, you know, some fiscal conservatism, you know, we look to see how the building deals with issues when they need money. Some buildings don't have much of a financial reserve. Some buildings have a big financial reserve, and other buildings have a line of credit that they may use, you know, in the event that some extraordinary, you know, charge comes up, you know, during the year. And I always tell people that it's, you know, very wise to have a reserve fund, but when they're shocked and see that there's not much of a reserve fund, I say, hey, you know, it's really not much different than how people conduct their own lives, you know, who own houses. Generally, those people don't, they should, but they don't have a pot of money in the event their furnace goes or their roof needs to be repaired, or or their sidewalk needs to be repaired. They somehow scramble to find the money. And it shouldn't be that way with a co-op, but occasionally it is. But they do have things called reserve funds, and that shows a little bit of stability on the board. So the financials are one aspect of what an attorney will start looking for. Jason, you've heard about board minutes. Have you ever seen board minutes? Attended board meetings where minutes were taken, or attended board meetings where there were discussions going on about the building?
As a member of a board in the past, we did keep minutes, but they were very loose. And when we would see the minutes from the prior meeting, it was kind of just a rough outline, some bullet points, basically touching on, last time we discussed possibly raising the maintenance, but we tabled it for a future meeting. So things like that. Nothing. And since I haven't been on the board, I have seen no minutes.
Okay. Well, you touch on a very important point. For some reason, in the co-op area, and this always has befuddled me, attorneys are charged with reviewing minutes, sort of finding out what's going on in the building. And while that sounds okay, I don't think the same kind of rules apply to co-ops, to houses, where an attorney has an obligation to try to find out more about the property, like going out to see it or trying to get some reports and things like that. Those obligations are usually, left to, the buyer. But for some reason, attorneys are charged with reading minutes. And we dutifully go and read the minutes. But as you point out, sometimes there are no minutes. Either you have a board that doesn't meet that often, or a board that doesn't really record what's going on. And, of course, Jason, let me ask you, if there was a bad incident in your building, there was a mass murderer, let's say, living in apartment 2B, do you think that they would want to record that in the minutes, or they might just somehow leave it out of the minutes?
That's a good question. I don't necessarily think that we would record that. Maybe it would be a off-the-record conversation, just because we probably would not want prospective buyers to see something like that in the building.
You're 100% right. Generally, you don't see much, if any, negative information contained in the minutes. Why? Because you would put the kibosh on your own resale if someone went to look at the minutes and you were trying to sell your apartment right next to the mass murderer. And there were minutes that said, oh, yes, the police and the FBI and the Secret Service have all been here investigating this person in 2B. That would really sour a person's wanting to buy in the building. So you don't see too much negative stuff. You see stuff like, apartment 4D is behind in their maintenance, or somebody snuck a pet into the building, or we're going to install new intercom systems and stuff like that. But generally it's kind of necessary, but of limited value to read the minutes. And more often than not, you need to bring a cup of coffee with you to keep awake while you read, those things. And then there's the prospectus. Jason, tell us what the prospectus is. Where's yours, and did you read it?
Well, I can't tell you where it is now. I think it probably is.
It's probably where you left it, where you put it the day you moved into your building and put it somewhere.
And it's probably long since buried.
Yes. So the prospectus.
And I couldn't tell you what's in it.
Okay. All right. At least you're honest. You get an A for honesty, D or F for not reading it. So the prospectus is the story of how a building comes into existence. And it'll contain all sorts of information from the very beginning where so-and-so is the sponsor of the building and wants to turn the place into a co-op. They in turn hire real estate people. They hire accountants. They hire architects and engineers. And all of that information is put into the beginning of a prospectus. And then maybe towards the middle they'll have layouts, proposed layouts of apartments, you know, the size, the layouts, the bathrooms, the kitchens, the bedrooms, etc. And then towards the back of the book they will have a sample lease. Because after all, what you get when you buy a co-op, as you point out, is a stock certificate and a lease to let you live in apartment, 2C. And those samples are usually contained in the prospectus. And finally, the last big thing that's generally in the prospectus is the bylaws. The bylaws is the way the co-op will govern itself. They'll have annual meetings. They'll have a board of so many people. The board will meet. The board will elect a chairman or president. The board will make its a yearly budget, and basically be responsible for running the building, hiring a management company, overseeing the finances, and stuff like that. So that generally is what a prospectus is all about. Occasionally, they're updated. There are amendments filed. Amendments depend on if something is happening with the on the sponsor's side. The sponsor is the person who is making the co-op. If there are changes in the sponsor's positions, they're raising prices of the co-ops. They've sold some. Whatever information related to a sponsor and their unsold units, that's generally the source of amendments. And then finally, the attorney will try and send a questionnaire to the management company. And the questionnaire will, among other things, say things like, how many shares are allocated to the unit? What's the maintenance for the unit? Is there going to be an assessment? An assessment is generally a short-term charge for some sort of capital improvement. Are there any lawsuits? Are there any delinquencies? Has anyone complained about this particular unit, either stuff that was going on inside it, noise, smells, leaks, or stuff that was going on outside it, leaks going into the unit, and are there any major improvements in the offing? In other words, are they going to replace the elevators, and everybody will have to pay the $100,000 that it costs to renovate or replace elevators, or the roof, or the sidewalk? So you get a little glimpse into what. May be done. But once again, co-ops should plan for the future, plan for capital improvements, but they don't. It's really 50 or 100 people. I'm a homeowner. I'm really not planning to replace anything unless it breaks. And while the co-op should be a little more financially diligent than I am, they're not planning long-term. Oh, in 10 years, we're going to replace the concrete, and 15 years, we're going to replace the roof. They're basically saying, we're not going to do anything until something breaks, and then we'll fix it and deal with it. But, that's the way, a homeowner acts, and really that's the way 50 or 100, if you put them together in a room in a co-op building, that's the way they might act. So that comes under the topic of a due diligence questionnaire that we send to the management company. and those are kind of, you know, and once we've compiled all of that, once we've looked at the financials, looked at the prospectus, read the minutes, and got some questions answered by the management company, it's usually time to call in the client then to review the contract. So really the thought I have to leave you is entering into a co-op takes a long co-op contract takes a long time to get into contract because a lot of information has to be gathered for any attorney who does regular co-op, you know, transactions before they can recommend to their client that this is an okay property to buy in. So it's not sort of, I like that building, I want to buy that building, let's go get an engineer's inspection one afternoon, sign contracts the next. It's not like that. There's a lot of financial information, a lot of questions that have to be answered, so it takes a little time to get into a contract. And that's generally why you want to engage an attorney who has some familiarity with the co-op process.
Well, that is a very comprehensive rundown, a checklist of things that, at least a big important thing, should be aware of, especially that you should be aware that your attorney is aware of, and you should take that checklist, I would assume. And if your attorney is not doing most of those things, maybe your next order of business is to find another real estate attorney.
As with all of legal and other issues, whatever area you're interested in, you should get a professional who has some experience in that area. And, you know, buying a co-op and getting an attorney who knows co-ops is really no different.
Well, that brings us to the end. It flew by a very interesting legal topic and one that is topical because since we did recently discuss the differences between buying a co-op and a condo, so this is just the next step in that. And if all helpful information, if you put it together with the things you need to know before you buy a co-op and now the things you need to arm yourself with when you seek out an attorney to represent you. Once again, this has been Howes New York, and here is our host again to take us out.
Well, I think we had an interesting conversation about co-ops, and I think we're at the point now where we've concluded our discussion, and that's the topic for tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And our topic, once again, was the steps you should take, you know, before entering into a co-op purchase. This is Howes New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a